According to the most recent comprehensive report from the Center for Disease Control, more than 100 million Americans have diabetes or pre-diabetes. More than one-third of U.S. adults have pre-diabetes, and the majority don't know it. What is this disease? What are some common symptoms? Are there common misconceptions about diabetes? Is it curable? And what's the difference between type 1 and type 2? Stay with me to learn what this disease is all about, how it impacts our health, and what Tucson Medical Center is doing to lead the charge to educate people about all aspects of diabetes, including prevention. Hi, everybody. I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, and we're going to get down to earth and learn more about just what diabetes is and exactly what it is you need to know about it. Before we get into the show, I'd like to do a shout out to the sponsor of this show today, Tucson Medical Center. It comes as no surprise to me that they are taking the offense when it comes to diabetes. It doesn't surprise me at all. They are at the heart of so many prevention programs and initiatives that address a myriad of health issues in our community, and we all thank them for that. Since 1944, members of our community have counted on TMC to be here for them when they are at their most vulnerable. TMC has been entrusted with this legacy, and they continue the tradition of providing the people of Southern Arizona exceptional health care with compassion, and they do that every single day. We appreciate their support and all the great work they do to keep Tucson healthy and Pima County. So before I introduce our guest, a quick tip from another valued partner of Mrs. Green's World, Tucson Electric Power, and it's all about saving energy, and who doesn't want to save on their energy bill? Believe it or not, we will be wanting an occasional cozy fire on these chilly days that we know are coming. They're not here yet, but it's at least it's not 110. So be sure that you close your chimney flue when not in use to stop cold air from coming in and warm air from escaping. So once you have your occasional fire, which I caution have only occasional fires because of the pollution factor and asthma, it's always something, make sure you close that chimney so you're not heating the outside. Okay, now I'm excited. Please join me in welcoming Callie Seiderwitz, diabetes care educator at Tucson Medical Center. Callie, thanks for being here. And I really am very eager to learn about this. You and I started talking so much, and I said, we've got to stop. We've got to get that on the air. So I think I thought about which one I want to start with, but I want to know what exactly a community diabetes educator is and what you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. So a certified diabetes educator is a normal healthcare professional. So it can be a nurse, a dietitian, a pharmacist, a doctor. Any healthcare professional can be a registered diabetes educator. But you do have to go the extra step and get certified to be a professional in the field of diabetes and education. My background is a registered dietitian, and I am certified to be a diabetes educator. So that makes me the, quote, expert in the field, but diabetes is a constant changing disease, and I'm always learning new stuff about the disease. It's not black and white.
And in this community, juvenile diabetes, I mean, I stay up on that, and a lot with the Native American population, and there's just so much now that comes up. I don't know anybody who doesn't know someone who has it, and I have several friends who do. And I did say community diabetes educator, and I apologize. It's certified diabetes educator, so I want to give you the right title there because you are serving the community. But anyway, so, you know, people talk about it. I wonder if you ask 20 people what is diabetes, if they could answer. I could not. I just know it's a condition. So what is it?
It's a great point. If you were to ask 20 people, you
they
would get
not,
20
yes,
different, completely
right.
different answers.
I say, oh, it's a blood disease. I have no idea.
Yeah, no, what diabetes is, it's a condition in which your body either stops producing insulin, the hormone insulin, or your body develops it doesn't recognize the insulin anymore, something called insulin resistance, which happens in type 2 diabetes. But we know the cause of type 2 diabetes, but we don't know the cause of type 1 diabetes. And there's a lot that the general population doesn't know about diabetes.
No, so it's really complicated. And what is the difference between type 1 and type 2? I bet you asked 20 people, no one could answer that one. I could not.
Yeah.
I was really excited to have you on the show to learn.
So type 1 diabetes is no longer juvenile diabetes. Anybody, in fact, can be diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. But what it is the body thinks that your pancreas is a foreign object and it attacks it and it kills the beta cells. Beta cells are what produce insulin. And you have to have insulin to be alive.
Right, right.
You don't know it right now, but your pancreas is dribbling out a little bit of insulin right now.
And thank God, and I hope so. Every minute that you're talking, it's like, how do you know? Because then we'll get into pre-diabetes. But okay, so type 1. Your body is attacking.
It's an autoimmune disease.
It's autoimmune disease. Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And with type 2 diabetes, insulin resistance develops, and that can be because of excess weight on the body, lack of physical activity, family history. There's a lot of contributing factors. And something that is important for people to realize is you can't look at somebody and assume they have type 2 diabetes. A person can be actually underweight and still have type 2 diabetes.
That was my next question. Mm-hmm. So you don't be guessing.
Right.
Okay. But how would I even think or know that something's wrong? Is it easy to find out? Like, I don't think I have anything, but how do people find out? What are some of the symptoms that you start checking out and you should go and get a blood work up?
Yeah, so some very common signs and symptoms of diabetes, both type 1 and type 2, frequent thirst, having to use the restroom a lot because you're drinking a lot more water, fatigue, sudden weight loss, and I always recommend my patients always ask their doctors for blood work after they've taken it, because sometimes a doctor won't tell you if your glucose is a little high, which is pre-diabetes.
Got it.
You won't get told that information until it's too late. And pre-diabetes can be reversed. And so it's so important that people know when they're on the brink of developing type 2 diabetes. So I encourage people, when you go get your lab work done from, your doctor, whether it's your annual physical or whatever, always ask for the results and question.
So I just got mine, and you're going to be staying after a little bit. I really did, because it did not come up. I have a great doctor, so hopefully there would be warning signs. So, like, the questions are just rushing in. I make a joke about this just in. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot that's just come in my head. Uh-huh. One is, what about, is it hereditary? Or is there a predisposition? Like, that's one of the things that I want to know. Because you said, it could be, did you say that it could be hereditary? I'm really listening, but what, is it in the family?
So, if a female had gestational diabetes, which is diabetes that happens when you become pregnant, so
right,
only females
right.
can have gestational diabetes, the child of that female is at an increased risk for having type 2 diabetes.
Got it.
And if you have a parent or grandparent or somebody else in the family who has type 2 diabetes, then you are at risk for developing type 2 diabetes. Type 1 diabetes, there is no, there's like less than 5% chance, if a parent has type 1 diabetes, less than 5% chance that their child will.
That's good to know too. And I know this is like, no diabetes is good, but is one less severe than two? Like two, you're on insulin or you're on treatment forever, or are they both equally as I want to use a strength-building word here, but equally as concerning. Isn't that a good word?
I think, I truly believe that they're equal.
Okay.
Sometimes
okay.
in the hospital setting, a patient, I have type 1 diabetes myself, I'll tell a patient that, and they'll say, oh, you've got the worst kind.
The really bad one.
Well, yes, I am on insulin, and I will have to be on insulin the rest of my life, but I don't think that that's necessarily the worst kind.
But you can already tell you have a good attitude, and probably that is in, due to a large part of how educated you are about the issue, because it brings up fear in people.
Oh, definitely.
And that's not good, and you need to get it checked out if you have that. It's very encouraging to me to hear that exercise and maintaining a healthy weight is good. So can we do some what I call myth busters? Because I'd love to know if this is true or not. There's so much unknown out there about this disease, and it's becoming so much more prevalent, in my opinion. I don't know if it's because it's getting diagnosed more or whatever. So you did the common symptoms, 1 and 2. Eating too much sugar causes diabetes. True or false?
False.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought, cut down on your sugar, healthier. Thank you for saying that.
I mean, it really also depends on the body's metabolism. So back to that saying that a person that is underweight or even skinny can have type
right.
2 diabetes. If you've got visceral fat, which is fat that isn't necessarily seen, but it's fat on the organs, that can increase your chance of insulin resistance. And a person that eats very unhealthy, by unhealthy, I don't necessarily mean sugar, I mean a lot of carbs. The human body was not meant to take in 90 to 100, 150 grams of carbs per meal. And if you look at the typical diet that we have evolved in as a society, that's what we see when we go
yes.
out and
bread,
order.
Pasta, crackers, everything. And I say around here a lot, carbs are not my friend. Because if I want to lose weight, number one way, cut out bread, cut out pasta. Just, it's so true.
Well, but the thing is, your body needs carbs.
Right. Carbs, I don't cut them out totally
yeah.
ever. Wish that I had that willpower sometimes.
And people with diabetes can eat breads, pasta. It's the true trick is correct portion size.
Right, right.
And you wouldn't believe it, but a cup of pasta is about 45 grams of carbs. And that's 45 to 60 is a general recommendation that I would recommend a person has per meal. So one cup of pasta on a plate looks very small when you compare it to the portion that you get at Olive Garden
it's
or your typical...
disgusting. At Italian restaurants, what we do is we have like double meals because we get them. And then you have enough for at least one, sometimes two meals.
Right, right.
So portion control is huge.
Yes.
And you're right. Like I measure a lot of my food because you would be surprised. Like a quarter of a cup of cottage cheese, it's not a lot. So I can easily eat, way overeat. So that's really good to know that. Okay. Being overweight causes diabetes. True or false?
False.
Okay.
It increases your chance of developing type 2 diabetes because being overweight, excess weight on the body is a risk factor for developing type 2 diabetes. But again, just because a person is overweight doesn't mean they're going to get type 2 diabetes. You've got people that are tremendously overweight, and they have nothing wrong with them.
Right, right. So you can't just say yes or no, yes or no, yes or no. If you're worried, have it checked out.
Okay. But I will tell you, if you are overweight, losing just as little as 5 to 7% of your body weight will significantly reduce your risk of developing type 2 diabetes.
You got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
That's just such, oh my God, it's such a warning for us. And it's part of why I was so excited to do this show, because this is about prevention. And we have thousands of listeners and they care.
Mm-hmm.
So this is really, to me, an educational opportunity for all of us, including me. Okay, if I have diabetes, I have to eat foods that are different from everybody else's. True or false?
False. False. I teach classes and I love seeing the light bulbs go off in people's heads when I say, you know, you can eat the same thing that the person you're dining with is eating, but again, it's so important.
Quantity.
With the portion.
Portion control.
And that person,
portion control.
That person that doesn't have diabetes, they shouldn't be eating all of that portion either. They
yeah.
should be eating the same amount you're eating. You
right,
should
right.
It's no different. I don't like calling it a diabetic diet. It's a healthy meal plan. that everybody should follow.
It's such a different message. It is such a different message for Americans. Mm-hmm. When you see the numbers, it kind of blows your mind. Okay, we're getting through these myths, and I love it. So a diabetes diagnosis means you automatically need insulin. True or false?
False.
Thank goodness.
And another common myth is people think once they get put on insulin, they can't come off of it. But I've seen plenty of people come off insulin. I can't guarantee it. For type 2 diabetes, if you're put on insulin, there is a possibility you can come off. Not a guarantee, but there is a possibility. Type 1 diabetes, you cannot come off of insulin. I will require it the rest of my life unless they find a cure. But with type 2 diabetes, you can, there's a possibility of coming off of it.
So interesting about finding a cure. And I wanted to ask you this. If you know it, great. If not, I never play stump the guest. It seems to me, since I became Mrs. Green 11 years ago, that it's being reported more and more and more and more. Increase. And I was a managed large volume mental health contracts, which included physical health, because we had autistic kids and ADD and ADHD, many, many more in the mental health system. And we started seeing massive increases in diabetes. Is it a new phenomenon?
I think, I truly believe, so type 2 diabetes, 90% of the population of diabetes is type 2.
Okay.
I do believe that it's how we have grown as a society, just what our diet looks like, the lack of physical activity, less movement.
Right. Things that were not really, we were not programmed to be so stationary, sedentary, and eat a lot of processed food, all those things.
Right.
It has to have an impact.
Right.
Really and truly. I mean, I'm talking to the U of A law school today, the environmental law students, and one of the things I'm talking about is the lawsuits that are out there because of eating or being exposed to toxins. So things have changed.
Yeah.
So that's a great answer. And I think what I think is really important as a message, if you get diabetes, it's not because you did anything wrong. That is the worst thing that people can think, I believe. Like, you didn't want to have diabetes. It's like, yeah, it happens to people.
Yeah.
And it could be environmental, but not things that we are consciously aware of. Is that a fair way to say it?
Yes.
Okay. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes people get something and they feel guilty. And it's like, come on, people. We have a lot of factors working against us that we're not aware of.
Mm-hmm.
Especially our compromised food supply. And even when you say eat pasta, make sure you're eating whole wheat pasta, because the other kind is just like really watered down. It's better for your body, even if you don't have diabetes. Okay, this one I love, and I can't wait for you to answer. Only older people get diabetes. Now that I'm considered an older person, is that true?
No, like I said just, you know, earlier in the podcast, you can be diagnosed with diabetes at any age, type 1 or type 2. It used to be believed that only children were diagnosed with type 1 diabetes and only adults were diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. Unfortunately, it is becoming more common that our children are being diagnosed with type 2. And again, I think a lot of that has to do with us as a culture, where we've moved the lifestyle.
Yes.
But that being said, at any age you can develop insulin resistant, or at any age your body can attack your pancreas and you can be diagnosed with type 1 diabetes.
Right. So I know that I go to all these conferences all the time, and they're, you know, it's a very holistic approach that many of us have to climate change,
mm-hmm.
because it is climate adaptation. It's many, many changes, and a lot of them are related to our compromised food supply. So it makes sense what you're saying. We don't even know how things have been changed or genetically modified or what sugar's in there or whatever. It's a very different world, even from when I grew up, because my mom was a stay-home mom. She cooked fresh.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. We ate canned vegetables in the winter. That's about it. But other than that, and she preferred frozen, but we had fresh food all the time because she stayed home. And then when I went to work, I don't even want to tell you the stuff I serve my kids. We crack up it now because they're all healthy eaters. But man, both of us worked. Mm-hmm. So it's like, what's fast tonight? Oh, I know, hamburger helper. Which, like, just the thought of that now makes me a little nauseous. But it's okay. I've learned a lot. So I want to just slow this down on my part because I was so eager to hear this. My big question was around predictive factors and things that we might be able to do to prevent it. Is that a fair question? What could we do, like me, to make sure? Is there anything I can do? Because it's like, I care very much about my health and the health of my children and my grandchildren. So what's your advice? Certified diabetes educator.
Well, currently you can't do anything to prevent type 1 diabetes because, again, we don't know the cure for type 1.
Got it. Just to reiterate.
Yes.
Okay.
Type 2 diabetes, I would say first achieving and then maintaining a reasonable body weight. And I stress the importance of reasonable body weight.
Yeah, not the Twiggy plan where you're supposed to weigh stick weight, which makes you all feel terrible, me.
Right, and BMI is not a great factor in that. BMI does not take into account age, and it doesn't take into account gender, which are two very important factors. So getting with a healthcare professional that can tell you what a reasonable body weight is, and a registered dietitian would be that healthcare professional I would recommend for that. I think is your best bet for the prevention of and being active, staying active.
That's great advice. Great advice. I started doing Orange Theory. I tell everybody because mm-hmm. I think it's such an accomplishment. But it's to reaffirm myself, and I feel better as a person. I am not as tired. I'm sleeping better. It's an all around good feeling when you're doing that 3 or 4 times a week, except at the end of the class.
And I know. People don't want to hear exercise, 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 but exercise does so much for the body. You mentioned a good one. It helps with sleep. It lowers blood pressure. It helps with weight loss and achieving that desirable body weight, but it does so much.
To move your body is just the best thing.
Yes.
And I told you, I just came back from physical therapy because mm-hmm. the world knows about all my challenges. And it's I have really sometimes troublesome sciatica. And it was a great visit. It was my first visit. And he said, sedentary. We sit and the body was not meant to sit. We were,
right.
We worked moving all over. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of physical labor. So the body, we haven't changed enough in our DNA to be the sedentary lifestyle. And how many of us sit at computers all day?
Yeah.
Right? It's terrible. And he said, even if you, because I'm doing part of it, but going for a little walk every night, just that 15 minutes, it's not, you should make it pleasant. And that's what I've done. Go outside in this weather now, and it's like, wow, look, there's flowers and there's birds and there's air. I'm not in my desk.
Yes.
So that's a great thing.
Yes.
So one of the things that I love about my partnership, our partnership with TMC over the years is we know that some of their outstanding strengths and contribution is prevention and education. I have had so many people sit in your chair and I stand in awe of all they do to keep people well. Mm-hmm. Their wellness is their gold star. So what's happening at TMC? What are you involved in to educate people or help people? What kind of classes? What's going on in that arena?
So we do a lot. We've got both inpatient and outpatient diabetes educators. So, and some cross over.
Right, right.
So for the inpatient side, if you have diabetes and it's not well controlled, there's a really good chance that you'll get a visit from one of us in the hospital setting.
Got it.
And then we always recommend that you seek our outpatient classes. We do offer classes for anybody with type 2 diabetes. We have free classes. So if a person doesn't have insurance or maybe they can't afford the copay for the classes, we do have free classes. And something that we're really excited about is we just started a pre-diabetes program. So people that have been diagnosed with pre-diabetes can get into this class and hopefully prevent the development of type 2 diabetes.
Got it. So there's a lot being done. And I know I did a special podcast on healthcare. Mm-hmm. And so you have a pre-existing condition, not to single you out. Most mm-hmm. people do have a pre-existing right. condition. When you find out what that means, it's like, wow. So hopefully, we're recording this the day before the election, and hopefully a lot of people will understand what can happen to them if we don't figure out. And I mean, Andy Slavitt said it on the show, so I tried to really not be political, but if the House doesn't go blue, lots of people are going to be very blue. Because we need to support our affordable health care and improve the Affordable Health Care Act. But this is one of those examples where someone's sitting with me that has it, and I have, like I said, three friends, they want to stay with their doctor forever mm-hmm. or with changes. So thank you for sharing that. It's really helpful. So you actually have a team, a diabetes care team, if I understand
yes.
that.
Yes.
So what does that look like?
Well, at TMC, we have something really special. Our care team consists of certified diabetes educators, pharmacists. Some of the pharmacists even are certified diabetes educators. And we work in addition with the hospitalist, the doctor. We work really hard to get that person educated in the hospital setting. But outside of the hospital, your diabetes care team is your physician, which I highly recommend that people with diabetes see an endocrinologist. Endocrinologist is the doctor that specializes in diabetes.
That's great advice, and
yeah.
thank you. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, not saying that your primary care doctor is bad, but there's so much that involves taking care of your diabetes, and it would be very hard for just a normal primary care doctor to know all of that stuff.
They just can't. They just can't. And that's yeah. it's not even fair to expect them to. That's how I feel.
Yeah.
We had,
yeah.
and it's horrible. I know I can see this woman's face. She's a breast cancer specialist at mm-hmm. TMC, and she's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And she talked about the difference between a cancer doctor and a breast cancer specialist.
Mm-hmm.
It's special training. It's
yes.
special
yeah.
everything where you have the next level of expertise and research and all of that. And I didn't even know that that was a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really just know your body and know your health. It sounds a little cliche to say your life depends on it, but so many of these things, if they're early detection, early treatment, and then an education plan, which is what I love about TMC. It's a very holistic concept in everything they do.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that. Okay, so now I want to know, do you have any special story or two? People love stories. Do you have a special story, one or two, that you'd like to share about a patient or yourself or something that would just bring this all home for us, or a child, anything?
I mean, so I'm very involved with the diabetes, you know, community. I have type 1 diabetes. I am a certified diabetes educator. But something I also do is I also volunteer every summer for diabetes camps.
Awesome.
And so,
see, I'm smiling. That's the thing. Yeah.
Any parent that has a child with type 1 diabetes or type 2 diabetes, I am a huge advocate for getting them into a camp. Camp changed my life. I think it truly kind of pushed me in this direction that I am now. It's a atmosphere, an environment that a child can feel normal, because every single person at that camp has diabetes. So every child is taking a shot. Every child is checking their blood sugar.
Even, I have goosebumps. That's the kind of story that our listeners love to hear, because
yeah.
I love to hear it.
Yeah, even for the camp that I volunteer, all of us counselors also have type 1 diabetes. The only people that don't is usually the med staff. So the doctors, the pharmacists that are there. And they tell us, you know, we feel like we're out of place at this camp.
Right. But such a good point about when you have that disease, then it puts you in a different spot as it relates to your peers and all that. As an adult, we have a lot more coping mechanisms, mm-hmm. and it's not shameful.
Right.
But with kids, it's hard. It's really hard. Okay, so I got all my questions answered, and I loved it, and it seemed like it was about 3 minutes. But anyway, let me wrap it up here. And I think I've been grinning the whole time because it's stuff that I wanted to know. And we have, like, a professor at Biosphere, too, that uses these classes for instructions in her classroom. Mm-hmm. So your podcast will go to ears that want to listen. I have a friend at El Rio Community Health that listens to everyone. Mm-hmm. So to you, Tara, hats off. Tell me when you heard this. But anyway, so here are my closing statements, my deep thoughts from Mrs. Green. As you all know, I hope, Mrs. Green's World is committed to raising awareness about every aspect of climate change imaginable. And whether this is the first podcast you've listened to or not, you know that we believe mitigating the progression of climate change is what we are about. And it all starts with awareness of your health, what you eat, what you put on your skin, what chemicals are in your home, all support our mantra of climate change starting as an inside job. You have to be healthy and aware of your impact on you, on your community, and on the health of the planet. In other words, you matter. Trust me when I say you really matter to us. From everyone on the Mrs. Green's World team, we wish you a happy, healthy, and joy-filled Thanksgiving. And hopefully it goes without saying, we are thankful for each and every one of you. And I'm thankful for you, Callie. It was delightful and very informative. I appreciate it. And shout out, the Mrs. Green's World team is going to be celebrating Thanksgiving with family and have a lot of fun things planned. So we're having some best of. For the 27th, Seth Godin, that is a best of. He's one of my absolute idols. Race to the Bottom or Climb to the Top. You'll want to listen for your intellect. And November 28th, Albert Avila, Tucson Water, Water Quality, and It Takes a Village. That was another great podcast. So, Callie, thank you for your work, and thank you for taking the time to be here and for all you do to make Tucson healthier.
Thank you for having me.